Well, good morning. Good morning, everybody. And I hope you're all having a happy Tuesday and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and this is episode 112. 112. I got to change the title up there. So I want to thank everybody who's tuning in. If everybody could, we do have that chat down, in the bottom right-hand corner open. So if you want to say hi or ask any questions, please feel free to do so. And also at the very top of your screen, you'll have the reshare or retweet link. If you could go ahead and retweet this out, we're going to have a fantastic show. We're going to have Joe Calasari joining us here, in a little bit. And I always look forward to picking Joe's brain. For those of you who are new to the space, Joe Calasari, I think, is a really good person to follow on here. He's very grounded. He doesn't get caught up in the hype. He's very level-handed, and he makes very calculated decisions. So again, I always enjoy picking him. And when I find myself getting a little too bullish or a little bit too out there, I go try and follow him, and he brings me back to ground. So I'm really looking forward to this. I'm going to go ahead and invite a couple people up to the stage right now. We will not have Bob this morning. He had a conflict in schedules. And as usual, Eomer's running a little bit late taking care of family and errands. So Texas Toast, I sent you an invite. Wade, if you're available, I'd like to get your thoughts on things. Shane, I sent you an invite as well. And let's go ahead and start getting this done. There we go. Shane, I got you up here. And while you're coming up on the stage, I do want to say good morning to a couple people out there, give some shout outs. I have Cruz G. Welcome back again. I really appreciated you coming on the space yesterday and asking your questions. KG, Phazon. We have Toasty, the Forest Hodlman, Whale Advisory Board, Oscar. IT Odie, good morning. Jeff Penny, of course, Dr. Nick, Jordan, Death in Bitcoin, Hunter, and good morning, Shane. How have you been?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm sorry I'm in the car right now traveling, but I wanted to pop in and say hello. And been great, been very busy. But I wanted to say congratulations yesterday on that show. That show was cool today. Well, we had a veteran, I think, come on at the end of the show and say thanks for what you guys are doing. I'm, basically really happy that there's a space for Bitcoiners who are veterans. This guy was transitioning out. And I just kind of, stopped what I was doing. I was, working on some sheetrock in the new studio, and for a moment, I was like, you know what? This is really incredible. So I appreciate everything you guys are doing on the Daily Show, and this is just, this is something incredible to be a part of. So great work, Coleman.
Well, thank you so much, Shane. That means a lot, especially coming from you, and everything that you've done, with Bitcoin veterans. So I'm happy to, if someone's listening to us and they actually pick up on something, I consider that, a job well done. And so again, that's what we're here for, guys and girls, to educate everybody and show the world what we're capable of doing. And just as a force, we're going to be unstoppable. And once we start getting enough traction, I can start seeing the numbers on the show start increasing. Again, we're going to be just a force to reckon with. And again, it's going to be a force for good. And I'll point anybody to what we did with our relief efforts in Operation Gabriel. Again, we needed no one to tell us what to do. We just saw what had to get done, and we figured it out on the fly. And that's what we're known for, right? That's what veterans are known for. It's just accomplishing the job. I don't care what obstacles are in the way. And that's why we do this every Monday through Friday, at 10 a.m. Eastern time. It's to help all of you, is to answer your questions. And again, if you have questions, if you're new to the space, please do not just sit by and have these questions burning inside you. Reach out to us, reach out to the handle, reach out to me. Fill out that connect form on the Bitcoin Veterans website and get in touch. We want to make sure we point you in the right direction, but most importantly, we want to make sure you're getting the best information. We don't want you to get down a path where you're taken advantage of or you just take a wrong turn. So please reach out to us. So thank you, Shane. AC, I sent you an invite too, sir. Go ahead and get your input. Texas Toast, good morning. It's been a couple minutes. How you been?
Doing good. Just filled up the truck. We got 330 diesel here, so not too bad. Not great, but it'll work. And yeah, just making the runs. Yesterday's price action was crazy. All good though. Life is good. I wish the shit coins would have stayed down where they belong, but we'll have to just wait. It'll be a long, long road to that, I guess.
Yeah, I think unfortunately they have a couple cycles left in them. I was hoping this might be the last one where they had any traction, but if I was a betting man, I think they've got another at least 6 to 8 years.
Yeah, especially a glimpse. It was a small glimpse into their future of the next bear market.
Yeah, absolutely. You're looking and you're going to see exactly what's going to happen when they all eventually go to zero. And we know that as Bitcoiners. But it was very disappointing seeing the president's son, Eric Trump, tweet out yesterday evening. Now seems like a good time to buy ETH. Again, I had a lot of faith in this administration, but just as it goes on, they're just, again, my assumption that all government employees, everybody working in government, just if there's an opportunity for them to fumble or mess things up, they're gonna take that opportunity, and I think they're showing that.
Yeah, I mean they're just captured by interests. That's the whole thing. So, you know, luckily we have our foot in the door a little bit. And at least some of the Bitcoiners' voices will be heard and are in some key positions, and that's a good step in the right direction. And then they're just going to have to find out the hard way with this other stuff. So, just like everybody, pretty much.
Come on, guys! It's 8D chess. They know what they're doing.
I'm going to bring you back really quick, Shane, to your time in the Marine Corps. And did you at any point think that the Marine Corps knew what they were doing with any operation during any day?
Now, you know, that's boot camp without, you know, running up against that wall going, oh my God, they're just going to let all these dudes get through boot camp that just suck. I totally understand. Is lowest common denominator, the best and brightest minds are not in government. They're not in politics, that's for damn sure. Who knows what these ass clowns are doing. Don't shitcoin, people. If you're here and there's crypto, that's one of our first and only rules is no shitcoining. When you look at Bitcoin and where it's going and what's happening to every other asset class out there, whether it's a commodity or, you know, security, treasury, or anything else, you look at these things and you go, every one of these is trending to zero against Bitcoin, and it's not going to be any different for crypto. Like, over time, you're just going to lose value. Why not put it in the most valuable asset, most limited asset on Earth? And that's Bitcoin. That's why we do what we do.
Yeah, that's precisely why we do what we do. And let's take a step back and look at what we're trying to do. We can't change everything at a national level. It has to start local. And so I think to set the precedents where the strategic Bitcoin reserve, if it ever gets passed, is coming from the federal government instead of local governments first, you know, your municipalities, your states. It's a backwards way of thinking it. And myself included, I really thought they were going to do it, but taking a step back, it's only right and it makes better sense and it'll have a better footing starting at the states and building traction there, and then let the government get in there last. And man, I think there's 14 or no, I'm going to go check right now, but there's 15 or 19 states that now have some sort of Bitcoin legislation that's on the books and they want to discuss it. Let me get that number. If someone has it off the top of their head, let me know, but it is just absolutely crazy. Bitcoin laws. I have to find it in the background. But yeah, just absolutely crazy. The traction that it's getting. And so we're becoming an unstoppable force. This does not mean that we can take our foot off the pedal at all. We need to just keep pressing, talk to your neighbors, talk to your local officials, and that's how we'll get this done. While we're waiting for Joe to join the space, I would like to pick your brains a little bit, Shane and Texas, about the United States Air Force flying over Mexican airspace and this kind of the significance of that. And for me, it seems, again, I could be completely wrong with this, but it seems like they're really serious about stopping the flow of drugs coming into the United States with this move. I do believe, and I don't have any, again, we don't have any hard evidence that it's happening. There's theories, but I do think government officials and agencies were allowing the flow of drugs coming to the United States. And I think that by allowing us to go in here and work with Mexico and stop this is a really good sign. And I'm really happy to see this take place. And especially, I think Mexico said they wanted to send 10,000 troops to the border as well to help stop it. How effective that will be, little unclear. But I do think that this is a very good step in the right direction. So Shane or Texas, if you have any thoughts, I definitely want to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it seems like, you know, he gave her a choice. He said, you can continue, you know, working with these cartels that you're working with, or you can work with our cartels and we can help you and we can kind of defend you against, the, you know, different people that, so that, I don't know, the way I see it, that it's going to be a war. And we're picking a side and she's kind of being strong armed into taking our side, but it's going to be a mess there for the next half decade, probably. So I just encourage everybody to, it's not going to be smooth sailing, kind of batten down, especially if you're on the border. It could get a little messy, with some collateral damage and stuff going on. So just keep your head on a swivel and stay frosty.
Texas, I think you absolutely nail it when you say this is heading to war. When you look at what Kash Patel has said, what Hegseth has said, what Trump has said, you know, like they're telling you exactly what they're all about. And they've been talking about possibly going into Mexico and Central and South America after these drug cartels for, I think, the better part of the election season. This is escalation. They're obviously using their size and the U.S., you know, economy in terms of, you know, the U.S. dollar. I mean, when you look at it right now, we're running obviously a huge deficit. But if we're running a $5 to $6 trillion, you know, economy, and Mexico is running a $1 trillion economy, what you're looking at is just leverage, right? And obviously, as their neighbor, once we start to, you know, impose tariffs and say, hey, we're sending people back to you, they can't really stand in the way of these things or their economy is going to collapse. And I don't have the figures in front of me exactly, you know, what Americans buy from Mexico. But in terms of putting a 25% tariff on Mexico, that's just a non-starter for those guys. So, yeah, I think you're right. You know, they're forcing this new president down there to either pick a side, you know, one way or another. And I think this is going to – I said before Trump was elected in that time in between that this was the most dangerous time in world history that at least we know about. I think now that we're seeing this administration move towards, you know, kind of following through on some of their campaign promises, that's – this might be more dangerous. You know, if they're going after USAID, they're going after the cartels, or – you know, they're literally going out and making enemy after enemy or exposing enemies, which is even worse, and then cutting off their resources. When you start cutting off resources for people who have operated in the hundreds of billions of dollars every year, you're backing them into a corner and exposing them. You know, what you're talking about is people who have committed outright treason. And, we all know what the penalty for outright treason is. So if you've got a bunch of those people who have been clandestine, that have worked behind the scenes, that are now being exposed, that don't have their billions of dollars, but still have their access to the billions of dollars in terms of arsenal and intelligence and networks and everything else that they've already put together, you better damn sure expect a fight. And that means here in the United States, like I know Texas talked about, you know, kind of border skirmishes and everything else. You better be ready for sleeper cells. And I'm literally sitting in front of the gun store right now about to go pick up a nice double stack 2011. And there's a reason for that. Like when this starts going south, like you better have something in your car. You better have something in your truck. You better be ready for when there's smoke, because you're not going to get another chance. And that's the reality of where we're at. Not to, you know, black pill the morning or anything, but as we go through this process of eliminating the waste and fraud and abuse and criminality and traitors inside of our, you know, inside of our country and in the intelligence apparatus and the NGOs, this thing is going to get extremely violent in some places. I'm not saying everywhere, but just head on a swivel. Don't be those people that get caught flat-footed.
And I think that's really important. And there's a lot of different ways that we can and go down this rabbit hole with this. There's so many things that we can kind of break apart. But again, we're not trying to install fear in anybody. We're not trying to live in a state of fear, but we're just telling you to make sure that you're prepared, because when things happen, they happen quick. And you need to make sure that you're ready for any and all scenarios. And if you're not comfortable with shooting, go out and find somebody. Reach out to us, see who's in your area, and let's get you out to the range. And we will make sure that you're comfortable with it. I'm not saying that we're going to turn you into someone like John Wick, but just knowing how to load a firearm underneath stress and knowing what to do if you get a malfunction and without really having to think about it, like that is the most, that's the stuff you have to work on. And you need to get comfortable with, and you're just making sure that you have it. And then situational awareness. Make sure that you're not making yourself an easy target. Again, if you're traveling with your kids or your wife, just always keep your head on a swivel. Just make sure that no one's really watching you or tracking you or things of that nature. If you're online, don't make your stuff public, as in like your personal information. There was a Bitcoiner who retweeted something, but it had his phone number and his home address on there. And so hats off to the BV community. He said he received about half a dozen emails and notifications from us letting him know of his mistake. But when I reached out to him, he kind of brushed it off as nonchalant. Like he wasn't really worried because a lot of that information is already public. Again, don't make yourself an easy target. When things happen, they happen quick. I mean, you don't want to give any fuel to your enemies. I'm sorry about that. But yeah, and again, Shane, to go back, I think if you're denying that there's not any sleeper agents, sleeper cells in the United States, or there's not anybody in here that intends to do us harm, I think you're very naive with that. I do think that there's people that want to cause direct harm, not to you personally, but to Americans, and they're willing to put their life on the line to get that accomplished. So just make sure that you're prepared. Everyone should be prepared for everything. You should have a couple of days of food. You should have extra water. You should have at least a tourniquet in your vehicle, a med kit in your vehicle, things of that nature. So if not even if yourself, your family, but if someone else that you see is hurt or injured, you can provide first aid to them. So just good basic stuff that everybody should have.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's worth mentioning is like, you know, when this stuff plays out, a lot of the sensationalism, like if it's on mainstream media, you can almost bet that it's a distraction. If not, it's been twisted and manipulated so that you're not paying attention to what you really need to pay attention to. Between, you know, some of the, you know, spaces on here, some of the accounts, and then obviously over on Nostr, which I highly recommend. I think you're much more likely to get, you know, better signal on these things, but just, yeah, you know, and I'm not saying even just word of caution. It's just, this is where we're at. As empires implode and collapse, this is just kind of the state. And, you know, luckily
we've done so pretty well as Americans because, you know, let's face it, there's 500 million, you know, it's 500 million arms inside of America that they're tracking. I would suspect that that's probably more like 750, if not, you know, closer, you know, to a billion. So it's like that as a populace, I think, you know, there are people out there that want this thing to escalate. You definitely do not, take it from some guys that have been, downrange and seen the horrors of what conflict brings into, you know, local neighborhoods. It's not something you ever want to see. It's something that we want to, you know, push in the back. And, you know, people are saying that Americans are lazy and too comfortable and all those things. And I don't think that's true at all. I think what's true is Americans know that they're 330 million strong, you know, give or take some are here or there. A lot of them are armed, and with that comes power. And it's power that they don't want you to talk about. It's power that they don't want you to, you know, to be proud of. It's power that they are testing day and night. And so, you know, the longer you can be peaceful, the longer you can rest with those weapons instead of having to, you know, use them for even defense, especially not offense. You know, that's what real power is in terms of this sense. The power projection that Americans have in terms of numbers and force, and not to mention, you know, the intelligence networks that, you know, we've built within, you know, civilian populations, within, you know, veterans populations. These things are things that are not known, I think, to the average American out there. But in reality, as a whole, that makes the American people one of the most formidable people on the planet. And I think that's really kind of the birthright of, you know, of being American.
And not to mention, it's like every American owns like 4 guns or some crazy statistic like that. So yeah, that's why so many people are hesitant about coming and actually doing something on American soil. But you know what? You could have 100 guns if you don't know how to use any of them. That all you have is just a nice wall decoration, or you're gifting your enemy something nice. So get out there and practice. You don't necessarily have to go to the range every single day or like once a week. You can go in your house and you can dry fire and do things like that. Safety first, just make sure, again, everything is clear. You know what you're doing. But you definitely want to be hitting the range, I would say twice a month at least. Don't have to put 1,000 rounds down range. A couple mags should be fine, just to make sure you're brushed up on the fundamentals. And if you haven't and you want help, reach out to us. Go to the BB handle right there, BitcoinVeterans.org. Reach out to us, fill out a form. We'll put you in a group. We'll find out who you're next to. Man, there's very few things that veterans like to do than go out and talk about shooting and showing others how to shoot and getting you prepared. So take us up on that. I don't think anybody would say no to that. And on that note, I do want to say thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. If you need ammo, go to blacksheepammo.com, restock. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate, punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training, paladintowertactics.com. Shane, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's out of Nashville, correct?
Yeah, he's in the Nashville area. I'm not exactly sure if it's to the east out where we went to the range, or in Cooksville, or up to the northwest in Clarksville, but I think it's one of those two areas.
Yeah, so if you're in the Nashville area, Scott Wiley, Paladin Tower Tactics, great guy, very friendly. The things that he can do with a firearm are pretty impressive. So if you're out there and you want to get a professional training, paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use our code BTCVETS for 5% off. Pay with Bitcoin, get an additional 10% off. So 15% off your order, solosatoshi.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th, family-friendly event. Bring your wife, bring your husband, bring your kids, bring your in-laws. Again, it's going to be a fantastic conference. Wade is, again, he's giving us little teasers in the back channels. He's doing so much. This is going to be a phenomenal conference. You're not going to want to miss this. Go to BitcoinAlaska.org. Get your lodging and your tickets today. Those will sell out very, very soon. And there was one other. Oh, the Bitcoin Veterans video podcast tonight. We are going to have Ashton Forbes joining, investigator and a physics engineer. So I'm really looking forward to this one. It should be a great, well, it will be a great show. New time though for the video podcast, 9 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you tune in for that. The link's on X, but it's live streamed on X, Noster, and YouTube. We're not on Rumble, correct, Shane?
Not yet. We need a few followers. Oh, probably a good chance to plug that. If you have a Rumble account, I don't care if you watch it, go over and follow the Bitcoin Veterans handle over there. Without having a few followers, we can't stream. So, really appreciate anybody who would go over there and take the time to do that. But yeah, Ashton Forbes, I don't know if you guys know Ashton Forbes. He's on another planet in terms of his, computing power upstairs. The guy is just, he's a phenomenal guy. He's doing some really interesting work out there too. And, you know, a lot of it's, controversial, so to say, but to have a guy, like that digging into things like this and have, you know, the horsepower and the community that will speak up and speak out about it, on his side, I think we're going to talk about some stuff tonight that's going to blow everybody's minds, and I'm excited for it. Mike has been chomping at the bit for months now to have Ashton on, so I think we're probably Mike's going to allow each one of us other hosts just one question, and then Mike's going to run most of the show.
Well, excellent. So go give us a follow on Rumble and tune into that live stream tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time. But we have Joe Colasari up on the stage. Good morning, sir. How have you been?
Good morning. Hope everyone's doing well. I've been quite well. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on. I know it was last minute. I always appreciate when you join us and picking your brain. So again, thank you so much. But I definitely want to get a couple clarification. There's a lot of misinformation on X about some of the executive orders that were passed by Trump. And so I'd like to kind of get your opinions and thoughts on it. And I guess the first I will go ahead and get out of the bag is the digital stockpile. What do you think is going to include? Is this really what we want, or is it the Lummis bill that all Bitcoiners should really be pushing for?
Well, obviously, the bill that you want is the Lummis bill if it gets passed. Now, whether that can get through Congress is another story. As I think most people are aware, we have an inherently dysfunctional Congress where, given the rules, for example, in the Senate, where you have, one senator that can effectively block any piece of legislation unless you can get to cloture of 60 votes, and you have only a narrow majority in both the Senate and the House. It's sort of frustrating to get really anything through. Elizabeth Warren pretty much and her cohort can effectively block anything from getting through the Senate. So, I'm not optimistic about the Lummis bill passing. I hope I'm wrong in that, but I just think it's not just the Lummis bill. It's a lot of things face a huge challenge. Even issues that are bipartisan are held up purposely so as not to give the other side a win. Right. You don't want to have the other side have momentum. And I think this has been a concerted strategy in Washington for decades now, because basically the ability to obstruct and get and prevent the other side from having any success is sort of paramount, because what it does is it effectively shows you as incompetent or unable to do anything. You have to force yourself to pass issue executive orders, which don't carry the weight of a law, right? Executive orders are not, they're not laws passed by Congress. They're really just administrations of the executive government. So while they're meaningful and helpful, I think, the reason why the president has tried to rely more on these executive orders is just a understanding of our system and its gridlock with a narrow majority. So, you want the Lummis bill, you're probably not going to get the Lummis bill. So the second best thing would be some sort of executive action. The Bitcoin Policy Institute has made position papers. They've offered position papers where they say, the president can use existing laws that are in place, stabilization acts, to try and acquire Bitcoin. We'll see if he goes that far. But I think the real key takeaway right here is that you have executive orders that have come down, which are great. They're going to study digital assets and they're going to attempt to, you know, try to acquire or like try to consider analyzing it. So for those that aren't familiar, you know, the executive action on digital assets that was signed back on the 23rd, it required there to be a working group to convene and say and submit within 100 days of the order. So, you know, 100 days after January 23rd, we're talking into the early summer here, we're going to have a report that comes back to the president. And among other things, the language in the order said that the working group is going to evaluate the creation and maintenance of a digital asset stockpile potentially derived from currencies by the federal government through law enforcement efforts, right? So the question then becomes, if they're evaluating that effort, what is their recommendation? Is their recommendation?
Is it just me or can no one hear, Joe?
I bet he got a call.
Yeah, probably.
All right, sorry about that. I had a little echo going on. Joe, are you there now? No, I just saw him jump down. Twitter space is always fun. Here, give me a second. Let me bring him back up here. So I'm surprised to hear Joe say that the Lummis bill is, he thinks it doesn't have enough votes. Especially with it, when I see the,
sorry about that.
Oh, you're good
now.
Yes, sir.
I don't know what happened. What I was wrapping up and saying, just my remarks is that, you know, the working group is going to evaluate the creation and maintenance of a stockpile. And in the order itself, they said that they were going to use potentially cryptocurrencies seized by law enforcement. Now, if that occurs, right, for the stockpile, that's very important, right? Like that's a significant bullish thing, trend, because the working group will include language from a signaling perspective that tells other governments, you know, we're not selling this into the marketplace. We're holding this, because we think it's in the strategic interest of the United States, something to that effect. Not, it's not the bazooka of money coming into the system, I think, that many would love with, the Lummis bill, right? Because that's actually Congress appropriating the purchase of new Bitcoin. That's actual real inflows. But it's very bullish, right, in terms of just the U.S. government saying we should hold this, and there's a strategic purpose behind holding it.
What do you think they're going to put in there, if you had to guess? Do you really think that it's going to be, you know, XRP, Ethereum, Solana, all this crap? Or were they trying to keep it pretty focused?
I do not believe that it will be a lot of, first of all, I'm skeptical it'll hold XRP, but I would, as a betting man, I would place bets heavily on the fact that it won't be purely, Bitcoin. I think it'll be multi-asset. There's too many people close to the president who do not believe in Bitcoin only. They believe there's value in some of these other things. So, I would be surprised if it were Bitcoin only.
Okay, good to know. And do you think the crypto czars, David Sacks speaking today, is he going to give any insight as to what might be included, or do you think this is just kind of a nothing burger?
His speech today in the White House, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir. Sorry.
I know, because, I mean, listen, they convened the working group, right? And they're going to let him work. That's the whole point. They want 180 days for them to put this through. Now, he may talk about some of the issues they're considering. Can we talk about some of the regulations that they're trying to remove to sort of have at this initial juncture, that he wants that this to be a very positive message for the space, right? But I don't expect him to get into too many specifics because it wouldn't make sense, right? If you're in Washington and you're putting together a group to study and carefully look at these issues, why would then you go 2 weeks later and just start spouting off, well, here's the conclusion, particularly when, you know, they want a criteria for establishing the stockpile. You know, they let people do their work and take time. So I expect big news, the biggest of, news items coming from the middle of the summer. That's when you'll hear, I think, their proposals and how they're going to do it. What matters more than the proposal, Coleman, is it matters how they're actually going to enact it from a legal perspective. Is it all going to be done through executive order, or is it going to be done through the Congress? The reason why I favor the former as opposed to the latter is because a lot of people propose bills to Congress that have zero chance of getting through. You know, we see this with the constant, you know, Bitcoin, strategic reserves that are being proposed at the state level. You know, people get buzz and you know, they get a news item. Oh, in Illinois, where I live, right? There was one representative who submitted a bill for, you know, strategic Bitcoin reserve. It will never make it out of committee. I talked to the committee chair. He said, yeah, we're not even going to bring this up for discussion. Because, you know, from their perspective, there's very few people that even care about this on a legislative priority. They have limited time in the session. They have to tackle maybe one or two pieces of major legislation. And that's all they really get for an entire year, a year and a half. And, you know, once you roll into 2026, you're in the midterms and people don't want to take votes on anything. They want to sit back in their districts and start campaigning so they can keep their seat.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I could still probably go a little bit further, but I want to go ahead and switch. I want to get your thoughts now on the sovereign wealth fund. To me, I'm really confused with it. Why are we creating this if we have dollar hemorrhaging? I can't say the word, sorry. If we're the reserve currency and we can just print whatever we want, and why do we need to create a sovereign wealth fund? What benefit does it have? And personally, I don't think there's going to be any Bitcoin in it. I don't see why they would do that. I don't think the fund will be used to buy Bitcoin. But I want to get your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it may. I don't necessarily. I'm not going to reject it that it's categorically not going to hold Bitcoin. It depends on, you know, what Congress appropriates. It depends on other, I think, construction issues of it. The practical thing is when you're acquiring something, and by the way, in terms of the strategic wealth fund, the thing I keep hearing again and again from policymakers on this is that it's mostly about the TikTok. If the U.S. were to acquire TikTok, that's like they need to house it somewhere. Who's gonna actually hold the paper? Who's gonna actually administer that? There has to be effectively a bureaucrat that does that. And are you gonna put Treasury in charge of, you know, the TikTok entity? Are you gonna put I don't know, like the Department of Labor? Like what entity in the United States government is going to be responsible for holding assets on behalf of the United States government? It doesn't really fit. It's not consistent with the mandates and purpose from an executive perspective of Treasury. So you need some vehicle, some repository for that. And you know, Sachs, when he was talking about a variety of different things, he was talking about, well, what if the United States has to buy a bunch of vaccines for a future pandemic? Shouldn't we take part ownership in that company to benefit from it? And, you know, because of that, because there, you have a lot of capitalists, a lot of businessmen, they look at it from the standpoint of, well, how does the United States benefit from this? And I agree with your overall premise. Like, you know, the whole purpose of a sovereign wealth fund is that there are, you know, states and in many cases countries that have commodity, you know, rich commodity economies, and they are able to run surpluses. And those surpluses, rather than just sitting in cash or cash equivalents, they can be channeled towards investment, which can enrich the country. And, you know, Alaska does this, Texas does this, other states. That makes sense, right? Because you can do it from that perspective. But yeah, I agree generally. I mean, I can see there's strategic purposes behind trying to acquire some companies, and maybe you want a vehicle to hold it. But overall, your sentiment is that exactly correct. When you run structural trillion-dollar deficits, I don't see a real reason why you'd want to, you know, debase that currency further to buy other assets. That seems to run counter to your purpose, which is stable, orderly markets.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I want to move on to Scott Bessent and the Bloomberg article. I saw that you retweeted, and you said this is the biggest news coming out after his confirmation, that he is considering a 2.5% across-the-board tariff starting soon, and then that number increasing by 2.5% each month. What implications does this have? And at what point do they have to start thinking about reducing some kind of tax, whether it's income tax, to go ahead and offset these tariffs?
Well, I don't really view them as related. I don't think that I know that people are hopeful about eliminating the income tax. I think that's a political talking point more than anything else, because ultimately you have to go to Congress to eliminate that. You can't unilaterally do it as the president. The IRS has mandates from Congress to perform certain tax functions. And even if he told them, like, don't take a single return, right, they still would have statutorily, they would be in defiance of the law if they just completely ignored their tax collection function. And also, keep in mind, the way taxes work in the United States is you are responsible for filing and paying lawfully owed taxes. It's not a question of the IRS calculates your return and says you owe X dollars, Coleman. You, as a U.S. citizen, under the current state of the law, passed by Congress and and promulgated through regulations by the IRS, you have an obligation to pay, period, full stop. And if you do not pay, you are guilty of federal law. Even if the president said, IRS, don't collect any more taxes, it wouldn't absolve you of your requirement to be legally compliant. How can they eliminate the income tax? Easily. They can eliminate it by passing a bill through Congress. Congress, through constitutional amendment, has a power to levy an income tax. Congress's taxing power, along with its spending power, are some of its most powerful tools, enumerated powers under the Constitution. So from that perspective, right, the Congress has to undo it before it is truly gone. And what I find frustrating is that although there are a lot of noble, good things the Trump administration is doing, I really want to hear more of their policies to getting things through Congress. Because, you know, anything that's done by executive order, it's great, it's flashy, it's quick, it's efficient, right? But the problem is you get a new president in there and they can undo it with a stroke of a pen. I mean, we just saw that with all of the Biden executive orders, which were repealed, hundreds of them, with the stroke of a pen. If you want to bring about real change, you need to get things through Congress.
What are your thoughts then on Bessent's 2.5 across the board tariffs?
I mean, I think I'm not categorically against tariffs. I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea in some respects. I think that the devil's always in the details. I don't necessarily think across the board tariffs are going to be as meaningful as targeted tariffs. But they're clearly looking for other sources of revenue. And the question I have is, if you're looking for other source of revenue in a liquidity starved environment, which is what we are mostly in emerging we're at in most emerging markets, that's going to weigh very heavily on those countries. So I don't necessarily think that's good for them. It's certainly good for the United States, right? And generating more revenue. And if you want to be doing business with a consumer demand driven economy like the United States, you're going to have to just eat it. But overall, I think that the biggest story here is they clearly want to put stress on certain industries abroad. The problem is that their long-run strategy of reshoring and bringing back production to the United States, it can't be done in 6 months. It can't be done in a year. Even the tariffs, right? This is a point I want to emphasize to people. Like, if you put a tariff on today, or the president did, if you put the tariffs on Canada and Mexico last Saturday, they aren't really even felt at the price point for consumers for about 6 months. That's how long the filtering mechanism takes. And again, you have a narrow window here. That's why I've always said, I think the tariffs are largely a negotiation tactic to get him to do certain things. Now, the president is kind of trying to give cross purposes, because he was asked specifically about this, and I tweeted out this video, are these just a negotiation tactic? And he says, no, they're not. It's one of those things where it's fascinating, and it reminded me of a mistake I made during the first Trump administration. You can't really take anything that is coming out of the official channels literally. You have to just look directionally what they're trying to do. They're trying to do good things, and they're trying to improve the situation. If they may say something, there may be another voice that whispers something in Trump's head, and he may change his position, within 3 hours, or he may give completely contradictory positions. I remember that, vividly from the first Trump administration. They said diametrically opposed things, and maybe that's a calculated way of making your enemy guess where you're actually leaning.
Okay. I appreciate your thoughts on that. I want to move into, this is a good segue, the quarterly refunding announcement that's tomorrow. You posted, I think it was last night or this morning, 2 months of sideways action on Bitcoin price will soon come to an end. Do you think that's directly related to the QRA announcement?
I do. It could be, you know, I'm personally pretty bullish here. I'm excited about breaking out of this range. I think you saw all the signs of exhaustion in early December, right? In early December, everything was popping off. All the meme coins were popping off. You had Bitcoin had made a massive move. And what it did, which is great, it's very characteristic of a bullish market, it consolidated. And, you know, this Bitcoin market is very different than prior cycles. I know that people will put up charts and regressions and log charts and say, no, it's the same. It's all before. I think there's too much evidence to the contrary of that. And that's sort of a longer form discussion. But, you know, Bitcoin's going through periods where it's just having a price level shift where it moves up and then it treads sideways for like, you know, like it did last year for 5 months. It basically went nowhere, up and down within a channel. That is actually closer to how equities perform, and it's closer to how maturing markets perform. They don't pop off, you know, 25, 30x and then sell off, you know, 90%. That's not that those are immature young assets that don't have sufficient liquidity. Bigger assets will make a move, they'll move higher, and then they'll chop for a significant period of time. We've done this, by the way, in the S&P, right? The S&P, just to give you an example, you know, we moved up to 6,000, then we trended between, say, 5,900 and 6,100 for many weeks as you develop and consolidate and develop price support. So what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin moved into the $100,000 range, right? And then we bounced around between, say, 108 and 90 in that range. Maybe it lasts a few more weeks. Maybe it breaks out. I am biased towards it breaking out because I think that the most important thing for markets right now in an era of fiscal dominance is how does the Treasury fund it, okay? Contrary to the opinion of many people on these X spaces, the government doesn't just print the money, right? They actually borrow it. They suck liquidity from the private sector through bond issuance and bill issuance. So if you are trying to assess that, what is really important in that calculation of like, what is the liquidity influence going to be? It's going to be how are they actually issuing their, the various different tenors of the Treasury market. So, you know, there's a world of difference between issuing 3 month bills and 10 year paper or 20 year paper. It's just completely different from a balance sheet perspective. I was talking to a friend who's fixed income investor, and he was telling me how the way to think about it, and he's right, is like if you have a bond that's a 10-year and it's $1 billion worth of 10 years versus $1 billion worth of T-bills, the $1 billion worth of 10 years is about 10x as difficult to hold from a balance sheet perspective as the $1 billion of bills. Okay. The bonds are 10x more in terms of balance sheet. Let's explain why. Even though it's just notionally $1 billion, when you're locking up paper like that, the way it is marked on various balance sheets, is from a leverage perspective, from a risk perspective, from a duration perspective, because you don't know where long rates are going for the next, you know, 5 years as that paper matures. It is very difficult. They have to discount it substantially from a risk assessing standpoint, because we know rates can move up, they can move down. So it's in other words, that duration risk, that volatility that's implicit with the longer dated paper makes it so the market has to absorb less of it. So this is what the game, you know, Bessent has accused Yellen of playing leading up to last year. Again, just for those that aren't familiar, Bessent was very critical over last year saying, look, Yellen and Biden, and they were trying to goose the markets by issuing just a ton of short-term paper, which is really easy for institutions to absorb. And they were, I got a call. They were kicking the can. Bessent said they were kicking the can down the road, basically saying, you know, we'll issue the historical norm of long-dated coupons at a much higher rate in the future. So basically, you guys deal with it if we don't win the election. Now, what will Bessent do? Will Bessent follow in the footsteps of Yellen and do exactly the same thing, sort of a hypocritical way, saying, I'm going to do exactly what you did, or will he return to the historical norm of issuing a lot more coupons? My bet is, because of the volatility with trade, he's going to slow walk his decision to move to more coupons. I think he tables that until the latter part of this year. I may be wrong on that, but if you wake up on the 5th, which is tomorrow, right? If you wake up and you see the market, you know, way down or selling off, my bet is the impetus behind that is going to be his decision to issue more coupons. If to the contrary, you see a rip higher and you see the S&P, you know, barreling above or towards 6,100, that's going to be the market finally breathing a sigh of relief that the auctions that are coming for the next quarter are all going to be heavily skewed towards bill issuance.
And so just to make sure everybody in the audience understands, bill is short-term, coupons are long-term.
Yes. So, I mean, it's an important thing to focus on. If you want to see some real examples of this, look in October of 23. You know, leading into the election year, there were some whispers that Yellen might, you know, do heavy bill issuance because she wanted to goose the markets. Well, to the day the QRA got announced, we were selling off very hard on the S&P 500. Bitcoin was taking a hit as well. But then when she made the announcement through the QRA, we knew for the first, you know, at least the first quarter of 2024, we were going to get heavy bill issuance. So the market absolutely ripped. We had one of the best months for the S&P performance in the last 4 years, you know, this massive rip up from late October through November. And it was huge, right? Because the market said, okay, we don't have to worry about this much supply. That's pro liquidity. It's not going to be as much of a headwind towards, you know, asset prices.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for that. I do have a listener question I want to go ahead and get. So the question was, with the Lupper Bright Supreme Court decision, the Chevron deference from last summer, will it be weaponized and potentially used to roll back onerous compliance regulations, particularly related to Bitcoin KYC AML requirements?
Yeah, it's a good question. So here's the important thing to remember about Chevron. And I run into this as a litigator quite frequently. What Chevron did, and it's called, you know, Chevron deference, is it basically established a judicial interpretation doctrine. Okay, that's the key thing. It's not actually a legislative or regulatory canon for like the regulators to follow. It's really for judges. So in litigation, when there's a question about the meaning of a term or the interpretation of some rule, right? What the prior to, you know, the overturning Chevron, the doctrine that was followed by courts was, well, if the SEC says it, or if the IRS says it, or if the EPA says it, we're, as a court, as a judge, I am obliged to defer to them under Chevron. I am to defer to the regulatory agencies, the three-letter agencies, and their interpretation of the text, okay? In a post-Chevron world, which is what we're in now, when there is a challenge that is brought, the court need not defer to the three-letter agencies. It doesn't mean that the three-letter agencies' interpretation is correct. That's never what Chevron meant. It doesn't mean that they were always accurate in their interpretation. And now the current state of affairs post-Chevron is that in the event of a piece of litigation or a challenge being brought against some interpretation of a statute or code of federal regulations, the court's going to look at it with the text. They're going to look at Congress's purpose in passing this. They're going to apply, you know, all the different canons of statutory interpretations, and they're going to come to a conclusion. Now, they may consider what the agency says, you know, if the agency, his interpretation of the IRS tax code, for example, that this is what it means, you know, they'll consider it. The court's not just going to ignore that, but they're not going to view their hands as being, you know, and they're not going to view their interpretation being handcuffed because of the fact that this is what the IRS says. So it opens the doors to judges to exert more discretion in their interpretation. That's the best way to think of it. Now, how does that relate to the question? The question is, you know, is this going to be some overnight huge change? It's massively important for lawyers like me and litigators that are arguing these things because we have more ability to make arguments that are advantageous for our client rather than just deferring to the agencies. But it doesn't actually change anything from a standpoint of the current state of affairs with the regulations. Now, what the various different chiefs at SEC or CFTC or IRS can do is they can actually promulgate new regulations, and the Trump administration put out an executive order on that where, you know, for every new regulation they have to put forward, they have to eliminate some. So that's obviously positive, right? But overall, you know, in a post-Chevron world, you still have to rely on courts to interpret these things. They're just not going to do so blindly deferring to the agencies.
Okay, perfect. That was really good clarification for me. I do appreciate that. Eomar, see, you have your hand up. Go ahead and fire away, sir.
Yeah, I just want to loop back to like what power the executive has in terms of taxes. I don't recall how in the past he was able to enact or enable different kinds of like rebates and stuff, right? Like you can, I don't know if that was like passed with a bill, or is that something that's under the executive where they can say like, you know, child rebates are X or Y or whatever the case. Do you know offhand by any chance, Joe? I'm trying to think of like different ways that they might be able to kind of alleviate some of the tax.
Yeah. I mean, so for example, like in 2019, they had this, anti-kickback rebate for the pharmaceutical manufacturers, right? And they were trying to, eliminate this. Now, the reason I start there is like anything that that the president's doing in terms of rebates or trying to, do it, really anything, it has to have a constitutional power or a legislatively, provided power to the executive branch. So, the amount of regulations and statutes is extensive, right? And there's a lot of discretion in terms of language in those bills, what can, can't be done. And what you really need to do is you need to find some sort of loop, some sort of foundation for the order that you can use, some peg for support. So a lot of these programs have like vague language that gives discretion to the Secretary of Health and Human Services or the Secretary of this, you know, various federal department. And that language is often spun in a way that says, well, Congress did intend me to have it. Sorry, I keep getting calls. I have to run. But the long and the short of it is you have to find some sort of tie to a statute or an enumerated power under the Constitution.
Awesome. Hey, thank Joe. You.
Yeah. Hey, I want to just say again, thank you so much for coming up here. I always appreciate when you jump in and picking your brain. It means a lot.
It's exciting, guys. Just, you know, stay bullish. I mean, I think that the most important takeaway I could tell you if you weren't around during the first Trump administration is, you know, try not to react violently to the headlines. There's going to be a lot of headlines. They'll continue. I think sometimes the headlines, I view them more as trial balloons, right? Like, let's see what sticks, what we like, what gets traction. You know, the media gets obsessed about this stuff. And frankly, you know, that's part of the strategy. The part of the strategy is to sort of, you know, deflect interest, make them keep guessing, make them keep wondering. And, you know, don't get overly optimistic and don't get overly pessimistic whenever you read a headline, because most of the time, you know, the stuff is just trial balloons being floated. But anyway, thanks again for letting me come up here.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. Really quick. Do you have a date for your book to be finished?
I do have a name, but I don't want to void any contracts that may or may not exist at this point. So it is done, completely done. I'm very excited to get this out there. You know, the traditional publishing route is incredibly slow. I will not go through this process again. I mean, obviously I've tried to negotiate a multi-book deal. So we'll see how that goes. That's still a piece that's up in the air. But the process of getting, you know, the agent and the editor and the publisher to sign on and floating all this stuff. And then they have to do artwork and then they have to, you know, review plot reviews and then do, you know, line editing. And it's just far too tedious. I know why people now go the self-publishing route, because it's more interesting and faster to get it to market. But anyway, I hope you guys like it. I'll come back again absolutely when it's on and published, and hopefully it converts a lot of Bitcoiners.
Sorry, I said date. Do you have a release date?
Oh, a date. I thought you said name. So we're currently targeting the end of this year. So that's all I can tell you.
Okay, awesome. I know you have to run. So again, thank you so much for joining us. You enjoy your
Thanks
day.
Thanks again. Bye now.
Yeah, I really look forward to reading that book. I was looking on Amazon to start a new series, and I remember Joe said he was writing one. So look forward to that, especially if it's going to be about Bitcoin. So that's it. That's everything I had that I wanted to cover. Eomar, Texas, do you guys have anything else you want to touch on before we start wrapping things up?
Yeah, I just want to mention, like, he mentioned, like, you know, beware of the headlines. I know, Nayib Bukele, like, offered, to take in prisoners of any, nation, including U.S. citizens. I think we can send, foreign nationals abroad without issue. But I don't think that they're, like, I read, I'm trying to find the article now, but I saw, like, something saying that, like, there's no, like, it would be too many legal challenges to actually be able to send any, like, U.S. citizens there. So, you know, worth digging into. I don't think that's really something that is going to come up. I don't think we're going to be shipping out, like, American citizen, felons off to El Salvador. But I could definitely see us sending over, illegal, those here illegally or of different citizenship. But definitely, like, before you get too worked up, try to look into that. I was hoping to have something, but I forgot to look it up while we were talking before, and, I'm not good at multitasking. So, just, you know, before you get too worked up about that headline, you know, look around, cause it just, like, popped right up for me when I was looking before. So, I don't think that we have to worry about, you know, your local friendly drug dealer being sent to, an El Salvadorian prison with MS-13. So.
Little friendly drug dealer. I like my pharmacist. Don't give him a bad rap. No, I just thought it was interesting. I saw Rubio there and that was one of the headlines. I'm not overly worried about it. I agree with you, Omar. I don't think they have a stance to get this done, constitutionally or legally. But it's going to be interesting to see how things unfold. So that's all I have. Texas, do you have anything else, sir?
Nope. All the Bitcoiners will go to El Salvador one way or the other.
Hey, there you go. Free trip. I don't recommend going to El Salvador that way. I don't think it'd be very fun. But that's all I have, guys. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Texas.
No, I was just going to say maybe in 5 years, once the administration changes and, Bitcoin becomes blacklisted again.
It'll
That's
be
where they send us.
Yeah, it'll be interesting that they send the deal with the IMF. It came with some stipulations. I know a lot of Bitcoiners are freaking out about it. I'm going to give Bukele the benefit of the doubt on this one. I think he knows there's a workaround with some of the rules, and he's going to use that money to benefit his country, especially Bitcoin. So we'll see as that comes to play. But he just bought 11 Bitcoin yesterday, I think it was. So they're still stacking. But that's it. I do want to thank everybody who tuned in. Everybody who's utilizing that chat box in the bottom. It's awesome to see your comments. Your feedback, and everybody who retweeted the link, and for all of you who just had us on background to drown out the voices in your head. I do appreciate it. We're doing this again tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We do have a special guest. We have Ella Huff joining us. She is working. Well, she goes to Cornell, but she's doing work there to get Bitcoiners at the university, and she has a group, and it is Bitcoin is Hope for Gen Z. So I'm really looking forward to talking to her. It took a while for us to finally get down this date just because her school schedule is so hectic, but it's going to be an absolutely amazing space. So go ahead and make sure you tune in for that one. But other than that, I want you to go out there and have a fantastic day. Start small. Talk to your friends, your neighbors about Bitcoin. Remember, it's the way you spread that message, not the information delivered, that they're going to remember. So have a fantastic day again, but don't shitcoin. It's like teaching a fish how to swim.